You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM at KVON.com.
Time to talk movies. We welcome back our good friend Mike Schaefer on film. Mike is an actor, an acting coach, and the possibly most informed film buff I've ever known. How's that for a credit?
I love it, Barry. Good morning, and good morning, fans of great radio.
There
good
you
morning,
go.
Napa County.
There you go. We're underway, and we have right up top here, I'm anxious to hear what you thought about Thunder Force. I think this is Netflix's number one movie at this moment. Is it worth my time?
Let me just say that if someone like a friend of yours, for example, or even a family member, like a son, you have a son, yes?
Yes, I do.
Were to walk up to you and say, "Dad, I strongly recommend Thunder Force. It kept me in stitches." You would really have to seriously reevaluate that relationship. You might actually have to pull that person aside. Perhaps it is your son. I don't know. I don't know the man. But you may have to say, "Son, it's been a joy of my life raising you. I've enjoyed being your dad. But it's time for you to go away." Let me just say,
the deal breaker kind of movie is what you're saying.
You have better luck finding the Loch Ness Monster than a joke, a single good joke that lands in Thunder Force. Mm-hmm. So it's fun to review movies, and I appreciate the forum, if you will. But I also find it can be a public service. Mm-hmm. So this is not sheer hyperbole on my part. Stay away from Thunder Force, for the love of God, for all that you hold dear in your life, Barry.
Sounds like you took one for the team.
Yeah, I do the heavy lifting, so you don't have to, my friend. Mm-hmm. The wife and I sat down. We thought, you know, how could we go wrong? And here's the deal. Melissa McCarthy and Octavia Spencer are good, and they have been funny. And they will be good and funny again. But the problem, I think, with this film is that, well, in a nutshell, Melissa McCarthy is married to the writer-director of Thunder Force, and he's a gentleman by the name of Ben Falcone. She needs to stop making movies with Ben Falcone. Mm. I guess everybody has a talent. Some people have a talent for telling jokes or singing or what have you. If he has a talent, I don't know what it is, because it's not writing and it's not directing. So to be completely fair, and I think maybe I'm just going through Ozark withdrawals, but Jason Bateman actually turns up. I mean, there's no character development whatsoever in this movie. And it's basically, the script is essentially a cut and paste job of sort of tedious superhero tropes that we've all seen before. And if you're looking for something in the superhero genre that's also funny, I would steer you towards Deadpool, for example, or Deadpool 2, or Shazam, which came out 2 or 3 years ago, or even further back, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai. Happy birthday, Alan Barkin, wherever you are. I just threw that in because I know things. So, avoid at all costs, Barry.
I feel that I was going to avoid this anyway. I cannot be seduced by Netflix telling me it's the most popular movie today. That does not work for me. If my defensive system is already engaged.
Yeah.
This had to me, from the first moment I saw an ad for it or a still or something, it had to me the flavor of a direct-to-video movie, which is a term that's now meaningless, I guess. But back in the old days. There was a time that we still were renting movies at the neighborhood video store when direct-to-video became a thing, and that was sort of the kiss of death.
Yeah. Or the bargain bin at Kmart.
Mm-hmm. $2 DVDs.
That's right. So avoid at all costs. Very disappointing. Not funny at all. I mean, there is no character development. Melissa McCarthy has super strength. Octavia Spencer is invisible, both literally and figuratively. She's either cowering in fear or she's invisible. It's a bit sad. I find them both to be very engaging. There are good actors in this movie that are given literally nothing to do.
Sad.
Not a single joke to be found.
Let's turn the page. Kong,
yes, sir.
Kong versus Godzilla was also on your viewing, I understand.
Yes. So before we get into that, what is your definition, Barry? What is your definition of a good movie?
What is my definition of a good movie? It's got to surprise me in some way. It's got to have some kind of emotional climax to it that makes me care about mm-hmm. something, about a person, a family, an issue, you know, a moment in history. I don't know. Those are probably the first two things I think of.
Yeah, I agree with that. I certainly think, you know, story and how story is executed, how the story is told. Mm-hmm. Also, of course, you and I, I'm sure, both put a high premium on good acting.
Yeah, that kind of goes without saying to me.
Bad acting can throw me out, or miscasting can mm-hmm. throw me right out of a movie. Mm-hmm. So by that very definition, Godzilla versus Kong is not a good movie. But who cares? Mm. Godzilla fights King Kong. That's why you're there. It's the title of the movie. It's in the poster. It's in the trailer. They fight. There's the flimsiest excuse as to why these two titans are fighting. You probably, you know, we're essentially middle-aged guys. We remember Godzilla Theater back in the day mm-hmm. when they played kaiju double features at the neighborhood theater. You probably recall 1962's King Kong, the original King Kong versus Godzilla. There's a thing, Barry, called the Monsterverse, which includes about four movies, including 2017's Godzilla King of the Monsters. Did you happen to catch that?
I've got it on my must-watch list for all these years.
Okay, it's sandwiched right between The Godfather and Citizen Kane,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Right.
I saw that. I liked it, but this is in some ways an improvement upon that formula because the CGI is so much better. This is a movie where Kong fights Godzilla, so you want to see the fights. You want to hear the fights. The sound effects are very, very good, very strong, very resounding. In Godzilla King of the Monsters, which had plenty of other monsters, Rodan, Mothra, all your friends from the Toho Studio days. But it was so poorly choreographed and very badly lit. You really couldn't tell what was happening. They were always fighting at night. They were fighting in the rain, which I think was just sort of a not so clever disguise to hide how bad the CGI actually was. This is very much an improvement on that. But I guess my one gripe, my major gripe with these types of movies are always the humans and what they contribute or not to contribute. Mm. To the film. For example, in Godzilla versus Kong, there is, you know, supplied by humans, there is comedy relief, which there is no comedy and there is very little relief unless you want relief from watching monsters bashing each other brutally. My question then would be, then why are you there? Why are you watching this? This is what you paid to see. And another thing that's kind of interesting, a little factoid, is when in 2017, so this is pre-pandemic, right? So the 5-day box office total for Godzilla King of the Monsters was about $51 million. That's the 5-day total. Now we're dealing with a pandemic. The movie opened, two or three weeks ago in theaters and HBO Max. And in 5 days, it made $47 million. Hmm. People are ready to go back to the movies.
Yeah.
I am 2 weeks away from being fully vaccinated. I got my shot yesterday. And I guess it took a big budget science fiction extravaganza, you know, featuring these two science fiction icons, Kong and Godzilla, to get people to go back to the movies again. I saw it on television, but I can only imagine how awesome it would be watching it in a movie theater.
Yeah. I have to admit, not my jam. I occasionally find myself turning on a movie. I'll give you an example, like one of those Transformers movies. right?
Yes.
Like
Michael Bay.
When that was hot, and I know he's a great action director, and I thought, let me check this out. You know, yeah. it takes me about 10 minutes of sort of that visual candy, and then it's like, why am I wasting my life with this, you know? There's not going to be any story that elevates me to understand the human condition. I'm not going to cry or laugh. I'm just going to sit there and stare with my mouth hanging open. that's not what I look for in a film. No, more power to people who are able to transport themselves into that world and enjoy it and you know, break from reality. But
yeah.
it just doesn't work for me. But it does remind me of how entranced I was back in the old days when it was much harder to create those special effects, like with the Ray Harryhausen movies.
Oh, my God. Right? I love them.
That stuff love used them. To, you know, I was fascinated by that because back in those days, or you're talking about the, you know, the original Godzilla is like a guy in a suit stomping yep. around on a model. You know, that was more fun, more engaging. Like, how did they do that feeling all the time,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now
yeah.
that I know it's all part of a video game movie hybrid that's all done in a computer, it just doesn't engage me.
When they're done poorly, it can feel like two and a half hours of dessert without an entree.
There you go.
Without an appetizer. Mm-hmm. And you're not left, you're not satisfied by it. Okay. So, I mean, you get that sort of head rush. Perhaps for me, you know, there is a perpetual 9-year-old boy who lives inside the Mike Schaefer experience, and I was grinning ear to ear. And it was so much fun to see them resurrect not just Kong and Godzilla, but Mega Godzilla. So that was like a big thing for me back in the 70s. So it was thrilling to have him back. So, you know, from the perspective of, look, you know, maybe I'm in that mood. Maybe I just want that. And we've talked about the big budget special effects, things that go boom movies. And sometimes if you're in that mind frame, then, you know, there are worse movies, for
yeah,
example,
yeah.
that you could choose from.
All
and
right.
so I recommend it. It's once again, I want to be clear. It's kind of a weird anomaly to say something is not a good movie, but I recommend it anyway.
There you go. So we're talking with Mike Schaefer on film, and I want to follow up real quickly. You mentioned people being ready to go back to the physical movie theater. The Cinemark chain, of which we have a theater here in Napa, right across the parking lot from us here at the radio station, is the
yeah.
beautiful Century Film, Century Napa Valley.
And I've been there.
They are doing their Oscar week next week. Did you know that?
Ah.
Yeah. So for folks who have not had a chance to see Nomadland, that's on the bill starting, I think, next Monday or something like that, the 19th,
yeah.
and The Trial of the Chicago 7. Now, these are both available on streaming services, but not everybody has all of those services. So both
that's
of those films are listed in what I'm looking at, and then there will be others as part of the Oscar week you'll have a chance to see, but prior to the awards, which are just a days away now, the 25th,
on
right?
the Sunday, the 25th, and
yeah.
I think I'll take this as my opportunity to, as far as next week's show,
mm-hmm.
I will give you my Oscar ballot.
Oscar picks, great.
So
Can't wait. All
the categories, not what I want to win, not my preferred, but what I think is in regards to looking back at the precursors and the various critics awards and what the buzz is,
mm-hmm.
what I believe will win. So we can do that next Friday. I look forward to that.
Get the lowdown from Mike Schaefer. Get to Vegas. Make your bets. He'll be in,
yep.
You're better than Dogecoin.
Yep.
Now,
get the lowdown.
Mike
and Boz Gags together again.
I wanted to say one other thing as a follow-up. I watched a movie that I gave disrespect to without having seen it previously, and I think you mentioned it, and I said I wasn't interested in it. King of Staten Island.
Yes.
Right?
With the Pete Davidson, the Bill Burr, Marissa Tomei.
Yes. Now, I may have admitted at that time, but I admitted to others since I watched it that I had a prejudice against it because I've never been a fan of Pete Davidson.
Yeah, he's somewhat divisive.
Yeah, I've seen him on Saturday Night Live. Like, what's the big deal about this guy? He's dating all these, you know, gorgeous women. So I had this envious, like, why are they attracted to this weird looking dude? Right? So
because
I had that,
he's on television.
Yeah. So I had this Pete Davidson bias, and it kept me from watching the movie. I turned it on the other day, planning to take a nap, literally. Like, I'm going to turn this bad movie on, fall asleep.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's really darn good, and I want to watch it again. It was that good to me.
I know, right? I think I did my, what, my top 20 of 2020, what, two, mm-hmm. 3 weeks ago? I forget what it was. It was in the higher end of that particular list. And you had said, yeah, well, Davidson, I don't think I can do it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. I hear that too. I was very pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
The kid actually shows up. He has dramatic scenes that he nails. It does help when he is surrounded by a strong ensemble. Bill Burr, for example, and I love his stand-up. I don't know how you feel about
it. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, I think he's great. I thought he turned in a really good performance. Mm-hmm. Marissa Tomei is always really good. I don't remember the name of the actress who plays, if you recall, Pete Davidson's Staten Island girlfriend.
Yeah, she's great. Steve Buscemi, how do you say his name? Buscemi.
Buscemi.
I haven't said that word in a long time. He's always great, and it was a highlight to see him pop up in it. And it's a story that it's funny, and it's entertaining, engaging. You kind of get this glimpse into a lifestyle there in Staten Island, which has, you know, like one of the worst reputations there is for a place to live. And then it's got so much heart, and it's you care about it. And that's what I, like I was saying, that's what I'm looking for. I want to care about the story.
I'm really happy that you mentioned this again, because I think, you know, I started off with two films that are questionable, one in particular. So if you're looking for something that is actually, you know, like Thunder Force is not funny, King of Staten Island is not only funny, you've got a really good story there.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, when I asked you before, what is your definition of a good movie?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of applies.
Yep, totally applies. So I couldn't recommend it more highly. And now I agree with you, Mike Schaefer. I should have listened to you in the first place.
I don't know what to do with you sometimes. We're going to have that talk.
I think you had one other film you wanted to talk about today.
Good Lord, I loved The Vigil. Okay. And here's something I want to say. First of all, it's a horror film, and it's on video on demand. Okay. It is a... You know, when you're dealing with horror films, Barry, that deal with the occult or the supernatural, almost always, eventually, the presence of a priest or the Catholic Church gets involved. Mm-hmm. And we can go back as far as Dracula, right? I mean, what repels the vampire is a crucifix. And think about The Exorcist, right? Now, I was raised Catholic, and I didn't really much care about religion back in the day. But my goodness gracious, when The Exorcist came out, and then I was like, oh, we do that?
Cool.
We're badass. What I didn't realize was in the Jewish Orthodox faith, there is something called a shomer. And what a shomer does is if someone who is, say, a beloved member of the community, right, who passes away, a shomer, who is almost always a family member or someone who's actually paid by a rabbi to sit with the corpse all night long and to ward off whatever mischievous spirits might be in the vicinity. And in this case of the vigil, there is a spirit. It's much more demonic. There had been buzz around this movie for quite some time now, I think after people had seen it originally at South by Southwest or Sundance. And for independent filmmakers looking for a way to shoot something with a low budget, this thing, most of it, Barry, is set in a living room. In Brooklyn with a guy and a corpse. And it never feels claustrophobic. It has a very clever way of just when you're like, I've got to, like you, the viewer, I've got to get out of this house, find a reason to get out, to get some air. They figure it out, and they figure out why the character cannot stay outside, that he has to come back. It is the director's name. Is Keith Thomas, and I would say this is a name you want to remember because it will have the same sort of impact, perhaps, in a few years, the way when you hear the name M. Night Shyamalan or Quentin Tarantino, you have an understanding, a sense of who that filmmaker is and what they can do. Does a very good job with a low budget. It's well acted. It has this omnipresent sense of dread. It's got, I'm not cynical when it comes to horror. I watch a lot of horror, so I know where the tricks are. And there are moments when I was terrified. there it's a very scary movie. So if you, this, I guess this would be my niche film of the week, or the offbeat cult film that I think I want to put a spotlight on. That would be The Vigil, folks. So particularly for fans of horror out there, you won't find a better film.
All right. So recommendations this week, The Vigil and King of Staten Island. The avoids might be, depending on your taste, Kong versus Godzilla and Thunder Force.
Not a recommendation.
Not recommended. Big, you should put that skull and crossbones on it, right? Mike Schaefer on film, always a great time. Next week, the Oscar ballot. We'll look forward to that.
Thank you, Barry.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right.
You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin.
On KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.